Well, it's good to be back here in this beautiful place. Has good memories for me. Clay, I could be as cheeky to say that Peter Beck thought that I was his curate, but I'm not sure whether it was actually true or not. It was a good year in 94, a busy year. And as I stood and looked at the altar earlier on, it actually represents one of my abiding memories of being here, those great candles that sit up high on the ledge of the altar at the back. In the year that I was here, there used to also be a single candle on either end, actually on the level of the altar itself. And one Sunday morning, we realized at the last minute that the high candles had not been lit. And I made the stupid mistake of reaching up with a taper to light them, forgetting that there was already a candle going underneath. I wondered where the smoke was coming from. And that old jumper was never the same again. Just recently, I was talking with one of our church school boards about the nature of the particular character of the school. And part of the discussion centered around, amongst other things that might say who we are in a particular way in the school, what does it mean also to call ourselves Anglican Christians? And people around the room talked about what they understood Christian to mean, the kind of attributes and ideals that might attach themselves to Christian people and to a Christian community. And people talked about things like tolerance and forgiveness, about humility and love, good things. I was also relieved when somebody did mention that they thought it might have something to do with following Jesus Christ, that perhaps a Christian had to do with Jesus. That was good. But I did find myself wondering, you know, often we don't sit again and reflect on what does it mean for me to be a Christian? And one of the things that is important to me is holding a vision of things being different, a vision of things being transformed into a new kind of reality. That's, for me, part of what it is to be Christian. So the writer to the Hebrews says, now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And it's a statement about believing in a different future, a better future, God's future for this planet and for her people. A lot of what we read in Hebrews actually has a kind of a dualism attached to it, a sort of a setting off of two different realities against one another. In Hebrews, you find a dualism of above and below. There's talk of a real heavenly world that we don't see and a transient earthly world that we're part of that in some ways is a reflection of a more perfect existence beyond ourselves. There's a dualism of the present age and an age that's yet to come that lies in the future. So there's these ideas of both spatial and linear dualism that we find in Hebrews that they're a combination of a sort of a Platonic philosophy together with a primitive Christian eschatology. That is a view in Christian faith that God is yet to intervene in the future in a way that will put things right in a saving way. So the idea of these two worlds is particularly evident when the writer starts expounding about the ideas of a heavenly temple that's very similar to the earthly temple that Jewish people would have known. And there's a discussion about the role of Christ as the high priest. A lot in it actually has the sound of a popular philosopher of their day, the philosopher Philo. Greek Jewish thought combined together. And his work actually influenced many early Christians. They began to see fresh insights, new ways of thinking about what it meant to speak of having a future hope. These days, we tend to treat dualism with just a little more caution than that in theological circles. You see, too strong an idea of differing realities, us living in an imperfect one and there being something more perfect that's yet out of our reach can remove from us a sense of real responsibility for ourselves and for our actions. Because the idea of a perfect heaven begins to represent some kind of destination, some place we're heading to one day. And it's in contrast to this imperfect earth, which is somehow then a place to escape from. And that can cause us to place little value on this planet, little value on our actions as creatures who inhabit it. A disconnect between the physical and the spiritual can lead people to imagine that the body, the material body, has no value other than perhaps as a container for the soul. And at its worst extremes, that's led people to regard the body as inherently evil. Well, if you're like me, I have enough problems with my self-image without needing that kind of thinking to further encourage it. We're inclined then actually to take a more integrated view of things. We might speak of heaven and earth, of the spiritual and of the physical, but in doing so, we actually understand them to be part of one reality. Heaven is not a place to head to one day. It's the presence of God in our midst now. The spiritual is mediated through the physical, not some separate entity perhaps within it. It can't be separated in that way. I've always liked to believe that the sacraments of the church bear wonderful testimony to the combination of spiritual and physical together. And yet, faith tells me that there is more than what I see. I have assurance of things hoped for. I have conviction of things not yet seen. But I do not believe that they belong to another world or an alternative reality. And neither in the end do I think that the writer to the Hebrews really believed that, no matter how influenced that writer was by a Greek philosophical thought of the first century. For in this great chapter about faith, the annals of great figures of the past are recounted. And all of them are people who not only believe that there was more, but they're people who also worked to make it so. Abraham and Sarah made their great journey into the unknown. They believed and they set off, believing that what they were doing was going to make a difference. Moses gave up a life as part of the Egyptian royal family in order to identify with his own people and work for things to be different. Rahab helped the Hebrew spies escape from her city safely because she believed that what they were about was right. And so on and so on. Today, we can remember Mary MacKillop in our own annals of figures of faith. August the 8th is the day on which in our church calendar she's remembered. 101 years ago today, Mary MacKillop died, the founder of the Josephites in Australia, order that found a place here, Ngā Tāroa, New Zealand as well. One of Mary MacKillop's great sayings was this: never see a need without doing something about it. It's believing and working. For me, faith calls forth that kind of synergy from us. And those ideas are present in what we heard from Luke's gospel today. The parables are about, first of all, someone returning home from a wedding feast and finding the servants all there waiting, ready. And then there's the one about the thief breaking into a house. But the images are speaking about preparedness and alertness. And they suggest far more than just sitting and waiting, as if someone else is going to do it, someone else is going to make it happen, and I really don't have to care. Perhaps it's going to be God who will miraculously make it happen, so I just have to sit and wait. No, we're given actually the idea of people who are constantly seeking what can be done and alert to the opportunities, responsive to the opportunities to act when they arise. I hope that each of us may carry within us, perhaps even very deep within us, the dream of something being different. It might be in our personal life, it might be in a wider family or community sense. Maybe it's about the church. Perhaps some of us are bold enough to dream even nationally and globally about how things might be different. Whatever the dream of transformation and change that you carry within you, can we allow it to become an assurance of something hoped for? The conviction of something that can be, even though it's not yet seen. For faith allows that to be so. But in doing so, we should always understand that we are part of the work of such transformation. We are part of making change. As Mary MacKillop said, never see a need without doing something about it. God does not place those dreams of transformation within us for no purpose. And if faith offers us the assurance and conviction that such dreams can become reality, faith, I believe, also offers us the motivation and the power to bring that reality to life. Believing and working, that's the synergy of faith. I was struck by one paragraph in the little welcome call to worship part of our liturgy this morning, these words that we've said. May we have the wisdom and humility to realize the gifts we have been given and use those gifts to bring healing and justice. But towards the end of what we heard from Hebrews, we read these words. All of these, referring to those people of faith, all of these died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. It's kind of a sobering reality check about that. You know, alongside all of that incredible, hopeful encouragement about what these figures of faith offer to us, nevertheless, they died in faith without having received those promises. Believing and working for the dreams of faith is actually hard work. And it can be discouraging work, and many of us will have found that over the years. We don't always achieve what we dream of. Sometimes things continue to lie ahead of us, but our glimpses of them are real enough, even if we don't see the complete substance of them. And that's part of faith as well, keeping hope in the things for which we strive, the things that we continue to work together with God for. Always think that William Wilberforce is such a well-known example of this, you know, the part that he played in the movement to abolish slavery. 20 years Wilberforce worked on that, and many, many who will have gone before him. But it was 20 years before the slave trade bill was passed. And all that meant really was that slaves could no longer be carried on British ships. It didn't do away with slavery. 20 years to get that far. William Pitt, great friend of Wilberforce's who worked with him on this, had died the year before that law came into force. Glimpses, but didn't quite see the substance. It was going to be another 26 years before a law was passed that abolished slavery more universally throughout the British Empire, at least. Wilberforce just saw the substance of that and died 3 days later. 50 years of hopeful, striving, working with God and others to see a dream become a reality of a transformed world, a better world. How many, I wonder, were the women through generations who died in the hope of gaining equality with men through the right to a parliamentary vote, And then finally, Kate Shepherd's generation made that dream into some substance. And yet it would be another 40 years before the first female member of parliament entered the House of Representatives. Kate Shepherd died the following year, just lived in time to see that dream become a reality after, again, decades of working, striving, dreaming for that to become substance. See, believing and working, glimpses of things and the substance of them taking shape. This is the stuff of faith, the vision of things which will yet be different, transformed. So dream and believe. Work and keep hope. For together with God, we can play our part in transforming this world, fashioning it more into the image of all that God intends and has made possible for us through the liberating love of Jesus Christ.